Hello guys, and welcome to a new episode of the Gloves On podcast. We're your host, Alexander Brams, and alongside me is Marcus Sundin, as always. And me and Marcus just had a brilliant episode with David Rouse. David Rouse is the GK coach for Northern Ireland and GK consultant at past clubs like Stoke City, Manchester City, Taiwan, Al Ain, QPR, Wigan, Macclesfield, Rochdale, Bury and Manchester United. So as you can hear, it's a goalkeeper coach with a lot of experience. And me and Marcus, we had a brilliant conversation with him where we were all intrigued by what he was telling up and his career within coaching and how he was been working up the ranks to get to clubs like this and now being with Northern Ireland. And then what the key takeaways for me in this podcast was the development he did with Tom Heaton. And Marcus, what were your thoughts about the podcast we had with him?
Yeah, it was amazing, obviously giving us a different perspective on goalkeeping. And that's why we love doing this podcast, to get a lot of different angles, you know. And you and I always love a good quote. So one that stood out for me was how we talked about providing a safe area for the goalkeeper coach. And what we talked about is that it's not only within the staff, obviously where the goalkeeper coach is becoming an important role, but it's also with the goalkeepers. You know, you always improve more as a goalkeeper when you have a goalkeeper coach that you trust and a goalkeeper coach that you can see yourself in. So he told about that, and that's something we listen to and obviously take into consideration. And I love, again, a knowledgeable guy like David.
Joined by David Rouse. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Very nice to have you. David, you are a goalkeeper coach for a lot of different things, currently for Northern Ireland, and then a GK consultant in previous clubs such as Stoke City, Man City. You've been in Taiwan, Al Ain, QPR, Wigan, Macclesfield, Rochdale. You started your career in United. So how has the journey been? I know that's a long question, but how has it been being in so many different clubs, both nationally and internationally?
It's been great. It's been a great journey. I've been lucky that goalkeeping has taken me everywhere. But I've met so many great goalkeepers, so many great goalkeeping coaches, managers. And it's been an exciting journey. And I've still got a few years left in me, I think. But we'll see where it takes me from here as well.
Interesting. Yeah, a few more years. Otherwise, I guess being a consultant is something you can do for a long time, right? It's just have to talk.
Yeah. that's the idea. I mean, look, I've been kicking like 1,000 balls a week for many years, and I just made the decision last year that sooner or later my knees, my hips are going to give out. Yep. I see a lot of my colleagues going on into the 50s and 60s and like they can't hardly walk, you know, let alone kick a ball. And I was of the mind, no, I can still stay in goalkeeping, but be more of a mentor and work with clubs. You know, I've done so many different jobs in goalkeeping that there's not much I haven't done. So just speaking to clubs, speaking to goalkeepers, I can help and be a coach off the field without kicking 1,000 footballs.
Yeah. I mean, many clubs, they also have assistant coaches and so on. And I have a pretty decent kick. So if you ever need like someone to kick the balls for you, you know my now. So call me anytime. I'll be there.
Trust me, the boys at Northern Ireland, as soon as I start to lose my power, they will let me know. You know, it's like goalkeepers, they don't suffer fools, and if you can't serve a ball properly, they'll soon tell you.
Yeah, I could imagine. Well, David, something we always do in this podcast is have like these four fire questions. So whenever you're ready, I'm going to ask you a few questions and you just answer as quick as possible.
Yep, go for it.
Okay. Gloves on or gloves off?
Gloves on. Always.
Always. Love it. Favorite goalkeeper of all time?
Gordon Banks.
Love it. Favorite goalkeeper you have played with or coached? There's probably been a few.
Radek Černý,
okay. And most important aspect within goalkeeping?
Calmness.
Calmness. Love it. That's calmness is relatively new. We usually get like decision making, the mental side, charisma, as someone has said, like, you know, the how you act like a good Ramsdale charisma or whatever. But calmness, who comes to mind when you think about calmness?
I think you think of all the best goalkeepers and think about how calm they were in big situations. And it comes through in different ways. So when you talk about, yeah, you've got to have charisma. Yeah, you've got to be a great athlete, fantastic handling, decision-making. But to get the most out of all those abilities, you've got to be calm in the moment. So I think the best exponent of that is Buffon. You just watch him over years. Why has he been top? Because it doesn't matter whether it's a World Cup final or whether it's a pre-season friendly. He's just calm. And yeah, I know you'll see the energy come out of him, but underneath that, there is just a calmness that just stays throughout everything he does.
Yeah, I agree to that. Buffon, yes. Iker Casillas, also very calm, very quiet guy. Buffon, also kind of quiet. But then you see the likes of Oliver Kahn and Peter Schmeichel. And of course, they were calm in the situations they had control, but then also they were very loud and very charismatic.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But I think there's an underlying calmness with that, because you could see Oliver Kahn would lose it like in a second. But then the next minute, he's making a calm decision where usually, like most people, if they lose it like that, they get heated. You know, they're not going to calm down for a few minutes. But like Kahn and Schmeichel, they could switch it on and off. I think a lot of times with that was almost a show. It was almost part of their character and how they'd be. I mean, if you ever hear like Peter Schmeichel talk, his big thing was it was always somebody else's fault. He would always blame somebody else. Now, I think after the fact, he would then look at situations, go, okay, maybe I should have done better. But his coping strategy was about to lose it, and then he'd be calm afterwards.
Yeah, I love that. And also my coach in college, he used Buffon as an example, you know, captain for many years. He's smiling. He's doing all this with the refs, doing the coin toss. And then boom, whenever he's done with that, he's just like, damn. Then he goes, boom, game face on, very concentrated, very calm. That's just something that like differentiates pros from amateurs, I believe.
Yeah. I think, look, I've worked with hundreds of goalkeepers and I've seen some great training goalkeepers where you'll see their ability and then you get to the game, they couldn't transfer those skills.
Yeah.
And I would say it's about not being calm in the moment, not being able to get rid of the fans, the noise that was coming from outside. But I've worked with goalkeepers where they've been completely opposite. They would be in the toughest moment and they would get 100% out of their ability. And those for me that are the best ones. That doesn't matter whether you see them on a training pitch or you see them, like I say, in a massive final, they will still have their levels.
Yeah, that's the most impressive one. I think a lot of people have also talked about Edwin van der Sar, how good he was in those situations and so on. But carrying on with a little bit more insight into your career as a goalkeeper coach. You told us before this podcast, so just to sum up, like he started in Man United with the U8s when he was 21, and then he rose through the ranks for 8 years, and then he went into kind of a freelance. And how did it go on with whenever you had a resume of Man United and then going into freelance because you wanted to coach adults? How did that go on?
Well, I mean, the 8 years at Man United helped me because I didn't have a playing resume. You know, I'd had injuries at key points when I was coming through as a player. So, and I made the decision early that I was going to be a better coach than I ever was a goalkeeper. But having worked for Man United for 8 years, it showed people that, look, I did know what I was doing. But even then, and with the knowledge and experience I had, I was coaching in League Two in England. So I worked with Macclesfield, I worked with Rochdale, and I would literally be there doing 2 days a week with each of those. And then I'd be doing my own goalkeeping schools in an afternoon. I'd be going into sixth form colleges, I went into a private school to work with their goalkeepers there. So at that point, it was just a case of I was working with any goalkeepers that needed work, and just looking to pay the bills and learn my way working with senior goalkeepers all the time.
And I think that's a common denominator within coaching as well, that you, if you're not going directly from having a great pro contract, like nowadays, if you have a great pro contract yourself, you go in and you can have a job straight away within coaching. I think there is a license name like called for that too, where if you've played for a pro for a certain amount of years, at least I know we have that in Denmark, you don't have to do all the licenses like a basic person has to do. So where I'm going with this, David, is that like having to work your way up through the ranks within coaching obviously gives you a lot of experience compared to guys that just go straight into it. And what do you think the main difference is for, let's say, a coach that works his way up through the ranks compared to a guy that goes straight from the pro game into being a goalkeeper coach, for example, for a program?
Well, I think, look, the ex-pro has the advantage of they've seen the situations firsthand. So when they're working with goalkeepers, they can be talking about when they were playing in a cup final, when they were in this situation, in a game, when they had to make these kind of decisions. So they've got that firsthand ability. They'll get respect straight away for that. But also, having seen it firsthand, they've got a deep understanding of it. The tough thing then is for the ex-professional is being able to then get that across in the coaching and translate what they did on the pitch into working with the goalkeepers. I think coming up through the ranks, you learn about coaching, you learn about people, you learn about the details, and taking your time to work with the young ones first gets you to see all of the details. And then, to be fair, you have to build up that experience secondhand. So, you know, after a few years working with first team goalkeepers, I'd seen so many different situations. I'd seen so many things that would happen in a game that I could translate into the coaching sessions and speak with them about. But then also behind that, I had all of the detail that I'd worked for, you know, 8-9 years working with full development of goalkeepers. And I think with that as well, I was fortunate enough at Man United, there were so many goalkeepers that I worked with over that 8-9 year period that then went on to have professional careers. So I could look back then and see the elements that they had in at different age groups and coming through and see where that translated into the professional game. So, like, for instance, Tom Heaton, when I started at Man United, he was under 12s. And I worked with him all the way through till like 16, 17. And then when I went to QPR, I actually brought him in on loan when he was 21, 22. Now, I'd seen his development all the way through. So I had that full picture of experience of that growth of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, and that's obviously amazing. And, you know, and that's where you see the development, and that's where you feel like you've obviously been a part of that journey too. I want to take a little bit back into when we talked about you mentioning the most important aspect for you within goalkeeping being calmness. We obviously have a lot of young listeners out there too, and the examples you've given us on calm goalkeepers is mainly these experienced guys, you know, Buffon in his late in his career, and obviously Kahn, Schmeichel, all these guys. And I think it's different because it's tough for a young guy coming in, wanted to prove himself to stay calm, obviously, because you have this eager to prove the coach, to prove the guys that you need to be a part of this squad and you want to make the saves, all this and that. So through the years when you've been working on, I obviously don't know how much you've emphasized this to your own goalkeepers, but what is like a pressing trigger for you, and how do you cope with passing the calmness on to your goalkeepers?
I think the first thing as a goalkeeping coach is providing a safe area. So the goalkeeping area should be your main safe area. So it doesn't matter what's happened at weekend games. You go over to that goalkeeping area. The goalkeeper's the coach. We can speak openly. There's no judgment. There's no pressure. There's no emotion there. The only emotion is enjoyment. And it's a safe area to start with. Beyond that, when I'm working with goalkeepers, I talk to them about taking away the emotion from situations. You know, there is so much outside pressure, particularly with young goalkeepers, where you've got, you might have a manager or a head coach who doesn't understand goalkeeping. So he's going to be very emotive in his response towards the goalkeeper. It's either good or bad. There's no in between. You're going to have teammates who might not be supportive. If you make a mistake, you're going to have the fans. The higher you go up, you're going to have press. You're going to have people that are going to want to knock you down. And I would say 90% of those know very little about goalkeeping. They'll certainly know less than the goalkeeper that's getting criticized. So with goalkeepers, I talk to them about taking the emotion out. So when they're looking at the game, look at targets which are process targets. So it's not a case of, I need to keep a clean sheet. I need to make this many saves. I've got to come for this many crosses. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. That's an outcome target. I look at processes. So for the young goalkeepers, it will be things like simple things throughout the game. Concentrate on position, decision, action. So they just concentrate on the game. Look where the ball is. Look where the players are. Take up the positions that are going to be effective in that period of the game. If you take up a good position, that gives you a chance to make a good decision. And then the action after that is your technical skill. You know, is the final save or the catch or the punch of a cross. But it's taking out those emotional things. So a lot of the triggers that I'll have with goalkeepers is about the process. And when they start to get emotional, I'll be on it straight away. So like any negative self-talk is banned in my goalkeeping areas. You know, with young ones, and you'll see it. You see goalkeepers where they're very demonstrative. They'll start hitting the ground or, you know, they'll start swearing at themselves. And I'll stop them straight there because, you know, and I'll say to them, if they make a really good save, or even if they make a steady save, I'm not going to see them have an emotional response to that. I'm not going to see them start, you know, giving it, high-fiving and stuff. And then why should they be doing that if something doesn't go right? So straight away, we take out the negative. And then in between sets, we'll talk calmly about what's gone on and talk about the process. Same when it's a match day. With my goalkeeper, it doesn't matter what level it is, I will not get into any detail with them after the game, good or bad. You know, there'll be a hand on the shoulder if they had a really good game. If they've not had a great game, that same hand will be on the shoulder and it'll be no problem. We'll talk about that on Monday. And just letting them have a day or whatever it is to recover. We would come in on a Monday or the next training session. I'll have had a look at the game. I'll have looked at all of the details. And then we'd have our training session. At the end of the training session, you know, usually you'd have a recovery session for the players who played. The ones who didn't would be off doing some extra work. I'd then keep the goalkeeper out on the pitch and we would talk through the goods and the bads of the game. But it'd be the processes, the good processes, the bad processes. And then that was it. That's it done. And for any young goalkeeper, it's about quickly moving on. Look at the detail. Look at the process, the details of the process. And then move on. It's the next thing. Look, in games, you don't have time. So, you know, you might quickly process, okay, I was in a bad position, but that's it. And you know, take out the emotion.
Spot on. Because obviously, I think being a goalkeeper myself and Alex too, and obviously the goalkeepers listening out there knows that emotion and being emotional is something you need to try to get rid of, obviously, in when it affects you negatively, because we've all made the mistake and it's going to sit right up here and it's going to sit up there for a while if you're not processing that and trying to let it go. I had dinner with a few teammates last night and we have a CDM that we're trying to get into becoming a center back. And he played the game previously as a center back and he asked one of the other center backs here at dinner, saying, "Hey, how do you deal with as a center back when you make a mistake, a bad pass, because that can lead to obviously something bigger. It can lead to a goal." And I look at him and say, "Take it one line back and imagine being a goalkeeper making that mistake. There's no one behind us to save that, you know." So I think that's something we all know within goalkeeping as well, that the pressure at the end of the day is it's going to be on the goalkeeper. And some people don't like the term, but at the end of the day, I will always say that it will be a lonely position. You can cope with it, but at the end of the day, like, if a striker makes the mistake, there is a line behind him. Sorry, three lines behind him. If this center mid makes a mistake, there is always the back line. And the example I just gave you, the center back always has his goalkeeper behind him. But again, who do we have behind us? That's the goal.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the difference, you know. And I think that's where when we talk about calmness, and it's not about going in to a game saying, "Oh, I need to be calm." It's about the processes, as you said as well, and then obviously about, no, take it step by step. You can tell yourself to be calm. You can tell yourself to control your emotions, and you can tell yourself how you talk to yourself and how you adjust your thoughts within your mind.
That's it. Look, you've just got to find the triggers for yourself, and it can be about finding your position. It can be staying in the game, talking with your defenders to stay focused. But like you said, when it comes to mistakes, I use this analogy a lot, but if you go past like an industrial plant or like an oil refinery, they've always got a sign up which says it's been so many days since the last incident. And it's because it's such a dangerous industry that they're in, they know there's going to be an incident. Now for me, it's for goalkeepers, there are going to be mistakes. So as goalkeepers, it's about trying to work on keeping the time between those mistakes happen, and knowing that, look, mistakes are going to find you. You know, you'll have the odd thing that happens. You might have just something technically that you're working through, and the mistake happens. But it's just trying to pride yourself in the time in between, and to keep that time in between is about going back to the processes, going back to, you know, calm thoughts, thinking through each moment of the game, and, you know, like being in the zone, you know, just watching the game and getting your triggers off the game. You know, that's why, like for me, goalkeeping work now, I do so much on scenarios, because I want all the scenarios that might come up in the game for goalkeepers to see them again and again and again. And then when they get on a match day, their trigger is recognizing, oh, okay, well, we've worked on this. This is the position I need to take. This is the effective process now for this. And it's about falling back on that. That's something for me that's key, is having those moments. And also, like, when the goalkeeper's working with the team and they're doing small-sided games, phase of play, is as the goalkeeping coach being there to put anchorage onto those key moments. So something might happen in a small-sided game, which is a key thing the goalkeeper does really well. And that's where I'm going to step in and say, right, get the picture in your head of what's just happened. Remember that. Get that in your head. Anchor it in there, because that's exactly, you know, what we need to do. And it's key about doing that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's something in recent years that goalkeeper coaching has evolved into scenarios, and we see it everywhere. And the traditional shot stopping has kind of been moved away. I think many coaches have adopted into the scenarios, because that's what we need to train. And going on with that, do you sometimes, like, how do you create a game-like environment? Of course, with drills and scenarios, but do you do something like with hearing or visual impairment?
I'm very much a purist in that way. When I first started coaching, and I would have been the same as so many coaches, I would have cones everywhere. There'd be poles. I'd have goalkeepers diving over a bit of string and going through a ladder and all that. Yeah. And I remember at the time, I'd be watching them making these saves in these sessions, and then I'm looking and they weren't coming out in the games. And I'm saying to myself, well, they're not able to transfer the skills. But the truth was, what I was doing was so far removed from the reality of the game that, you know, they're having to make such a mental leap between one and the other. And that's where I came to the idea of, well, it's got to be closer to the game. So I will always have footwork and handling as a warm-up. And I understand that so many goalkeepers, they want to get their hands in, they want to get that. And I'll have announced feeds in that. But very quickly, I want to go on to where they're not sure where the shot's going to go. They're not sure when the shot's going to be played. The things that I will do is try to mess with stuff from the game. I'll always go from the game and come back. And I'll get feedback from the goalkeeper because I'll just come up with something and try it. And then afterwards, I'll be saying, like, well, how did that work? Did you find that realistic? Is that useful? But I'll do things with tempos. Big thing for me, and you see a lot of goalkeepers with late movements before a shot's hit. So you'll see the bounce set. Obviously, Kepa, who's in the news now, going to Real Madrid when he first went into Chelsea, had the arms going back and what have you. And that was, those are movements when he'd already got to a good position, and it's almost like trying to fill that spot while he's waiting for the shot. And if you think back to so many goalkeeper sessions you'll do, the trigger will be, the feed will come when you're set. So it's a case of you'll make a movement, set, shot comes. Make a movement, set, shot comes. So the feeder will be told, or the server will be told, don't hit the ball until he's set, because we need the goalkeeper to be set. But then what about those times where you're set and ready and the shot doesn't come straight away? Because we'll work all the time on set, shot. But the truth is, you're going to be, if you do your work well, you're going to be rewarded by having that extra split second to deal with the shot. And so a lot of times now, I will have what would usually be, we'll come into a position and set. I might hold for a split second or two because I'm trying to go back to calmness. I'm trying to get that calmness before the shot comes. I've got a goalkeeper that I've been working with recently, and he struggles with that. He has to fill that split second with a little bounce or coming down the line. And where he's been in a perfect position, he ends up being out of position or off balance just because it's like this nervous energy. I need to do something because, you know, I can't just stand it. So I'll mess with the tempos. Other things that I will do, if I know that we're coming up against a team where we're going to have a lot of possession and very little action, the number one goalkeeper who's going to play, he might get one set for the other goalkeepers too. So he's only going to get a small amount of action. This will be like later on in the week, so a couple of days before the game. But I'm trying to get that tempo to be like the game that he's about to go into. There's no point me giving a high tempo, you know, we're going to make 40, 50 saves in this 20, 30 minute session. If the reality is on the Saturday, he might have one.
Yeah.
And then I'll be saying to him, when he does come into the set, the most important save is going to be that first one. So your focus has gone away. You might have been serving footballs. You might have been resting, have a drink while the other goalkeepers are working. You come in and suddenly I need you switched on. Bang, that's it. This first save is the most important. And at times there, if that's a really effective save, I might say, right, that's it. We're going to do a set of three or four. No, that'll do. And listen, some goalkeepers will get angry with that because they're hungry. They want more.
Yeah.
But it's just about building that tempo. Equally, if we're going to play on a Saturday, and I know that we're playing top of the league and we're going to get battered. To be fair, Northern Ireland going playing against Denmark, we knew we were going to be under pressure. So yeah. So there was no point me doing low tempo session. It needed to be high because we know there's going to be balls through the lines. There's going to be balls into the box. You know, you're going to have to be switched on for long periods of the game. But yeah, I suppose that's my biggest thing at the minute.
I love that because I also, when I was in college, like my coach would tell me to stop before the other goalkeepers because it was enough. And I, as you said, like, I was like, no, I want more. Like I want to do more. But if you look at the game now, okay, it's rare that a goalkeeper over 90 minutes has more than 8 saves. If he has 8 saves, it's a big save game. So what should should you now like do sessions where you only have 10 saves, and otherwise just in the meantime you were just doing some foot stuff more with positioning, and then reacting to those position and playing, and maybe a little bit of sweeper keeper and communication? Like how?
Yeah, I think for me early in the week, I would still do higher reps, mm-hmm. because the truth is, you might have one thing to do in the game, but you need to be absolutely on point for that one thing. So people say, why is it goalkeepers work so much harder in training than they do in games? But it's like we say, you know, we've got that one thing, and if we make that mistake, that could be the game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, the centre back's always got somebody behind him. You know, further up the field, they can make as many mistakes as they want, as long as they contribute to the game as a whole. So yeah, I would always still have like more reps early in the week, further away from the game, and then I would look as it's getting closer to the end to then try and match that tempo, and make sure that then every single thing that they do has got to be spot on.
Yeah.
But throughout as well, like you talk about footwork. I look at all my sessions now. I've got to have elements of passing and distribution in all of them. I've got to have some decision making. It's brilliant. If you ever get a chance to see the Burnley's goalkeeping coach work, Yala, the Dutch coach, he will always work into two goals. So he will have a small pitch, medium pitch, big pitch, depending on what the subject he's working on. But there'll always be a goalkeeper starting the play and always one of them defending the play. So that he's constantly working on that. And look, the way that they play, total football coming out from the back, you know, they have to do that.
Amazing. It sounds like he should be a guest on the podcast to talk about.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
If you know him, let us know. We are coming to an end here, and we usually, when we have first time guests, we ask them, since we're called Gloves On Podcast, what are your favorite gloves and why?
Okay. Well, I've actually got these are copies. I could probably get in trouble, but these were my favorite gloves.
Ooh, yes. Old school Roche.
Old school Roche was always my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a real glove hound. I'm a nightmare. My favorites at the minute, AB1s, Asmir Begovic's brand.
Yeah.
I helped him get to QPR this summer, and he's been trying to get me to wear his gloves for about 10 years. So I finally said that I would wear them.
Nice.
But they are very good. Mm-hmm. But
I have them as well. Yeah.
I usually go in through about three or four different brands a season. I don't usually take up any sponsorships because I'm so I'll see the latest thing come out, and I've got to try that. So. Yeah.
I totally get what you mean. I've just been sponsored for 2 years now by AB1, and I used them a lot whenever I was playing more than I do now, and good gloves and so on. But yeah, I'm also now a glove hound. I want to try different stuff and see how it is. It's developing a lot. Well, David Rouse, guys, go follow him on Instagram. It's David Rouse. You'll find him there. You can see some of his content. You can see what he's doing, look at his former past, and then, you can give us a review at one point with this podcast. So, David, just thank you very much for taking the time here on your busy day to talk about football and GK philosophy and your career and so on. It's been brilliant.
Thank you very much for your time, Alex Marcus. Thank you very much.
And to you guys still listening out there, please go follow Gloves On Podcast on your favorite social media, leave a review, and share this with one other goalkeeper for them to keep improving. Catch you on the next episode of Gloves On Podcast.